Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Nampak's pre-closed period conference call. All participants will be in listen-only mode. There will be an opportunity to ask questions at the end of today's opening remarks. If you should need assistance during the conference, please signal an operator pressing star and then zero. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I'd like to hand the conference over to Mr. André de Ruyter. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you very much, and good afternoon and good morning to everybody on the line for this pre-closing update call. With me in the room, I've got our Chief Financial Officer, Glenn Fullerton, as well as our Investor Relations Manager, Nondyebo Mqulwana. We have issued a SENS announcement, which was distributed late yesterday. And as you can see from the announcement, economic conditions prevailing in key markets, GDP has slowed in South Africa. In spite of that, we have seen improved demand for value brands, which has benefited our beverage can business. The beverage can market in South Africa grew by between 3% and 3.5%, which is pleasing, as combined with the elimination of capacity from our Epping plant closure in Cape Town, we expect that a continued above GDP growth in demand for beverage cans will absorb excess capacity installed by new entrants into the beverage can market. Due to pressure on spending power, we've also seen greater volumes for canned fish and vegetables. Angolan demand remains under pressure and softer as a consequence of a decline in consumer spending power. This is attributable to the fact Kwanza devalued by more than 85%. Based on our experience in Nigeria, we believe that this will flush through the system in a period of about 12 to 18 months as wage inflation catches up with producer price inflation. Nigeria is the bright spark in the performance in the 5 months of the financial year to date, and we have seen very buoyant demand for beverage cans in that country, and we are currently running at record production levels in that country, both as a consequence of an overall growth in the market as well as a successful expansion in our market share in Nigeria. We are consequently reconsidering the second line in that country. In Zimbabwe, we are assessing the impacts of the RTGS balances in that country. We have been able to hedge on a one-to-one basis in terms of an agreement that was signed with the Reserve Bank of Zimbabwe, an amount of $57 million, and that represents approximately 67% of the in-country cash balances. In addition, there is an undertaking by the Reserve Bank of Zimbabwe to honor so-called legacy debt on a one-to-one basis. Based on the fact that Nampak Limited owns 51% of Nampak Zimbabwe, together with the hedges and the commitments to honor legacy debt, we are expecting that the impact on earnings of a potential devaluation as a consequence of the change in the monetary dispensation in Zimbabwe is likely to be moderate rather than across the full 1.3 billion rand that is currently in country. Across our businesses, as I said, the metals business doing quite well. The active steps that we've taken to minimize our capacity by shutting down the Epping line, saving 60 million rand in overhead costs in the process, has served us well, in addition to continued successes in managing our cost base, containing our cost increases to significantly below the rate of inflation, as well as continued improvements in our operations and a firm control over spoilage rates in South Africa. DIFF Food is experiencing mixed demand. We are seeing fairly strong and sustained demand across food categories, but on the other hand, diversified can volumes have come under pressure. In plastics, Plastics SA is in a fairly challenging market situation, as you will have seen from some of our competitors who've also reported results recently. However, in the rest of Africa, we are doing quite well, in particular in Zimbabwe, with Megapack and CMB, who are increasing their operations, in particular with exports to neighboring countries, which of course enable them to earn foreign exchange to pay for the imports of raw materials, thereby obviating the need for further credit extension from foreign Nampak entities to Zimbabwean operations. A similar situation prevails in the paper business in Umyani in Zimbabwe, and we are seeing a recovery in Zambia and Malawi, and even Bullpack in Kenya is doing reasonably well in spite of some softer market conditions. The glass operation continues to have some power issues, although the rotary uninterruptible power supply system is absorbing those power fluctuations, and we have therefore not been affected by load shedding. The sales process of glass is proceeding as planned and as communicated earlier in our trading update to the market. In terms of liquidity, Nigeria is essentially fully liquid. We are doing particularly well there. In Angola, there has been a change in the dispensation for the conversion of Kwanzaa into dollars, in that the full Kwanzaa amount has to be secured in a so-called Kativa account, and this has resulted in a reduction in the amount of Kwanzaa hedged in that country down to 43%. However, because of the fact that the major devaluation, in our view, has already occurred, we do not anticipate that this poses a significant downside risk in terms of further devaluations. We are managing our business in Zimbabwe on a very stringent basis, and only raw materials that can be procured from locally generated operations can be bought by the operations in Zimbabwe. If we move on to the financial position, we are very comfortable that our balance sheet is in very good shape. Our covenants are firmly under control. Gearing is actually slightly below our targeted gearing range, and we are managing the situation very closely by keeping a tight control over further capital expenditure, obviously without compromising the integrity of our asset base. Load shedding, this is a pertinent topic. However, we have not been unduly negatively impacted because of the fact that municipalities operate on a priority basis for industrial areas, and as such, only some of our outlying plastics operations that are quite small have had some negative impacts. But all in all, our major operations in Springs, Roslyn, Germiston, and so forth have not experienced any negative impact as a consequence of load shedding. We are in the process of reviewing, as we have done over the past number of years, all of the components in our portfolio. And in addition to the sale of glass, we are considering potential further rationalization and optimization of the portfolio. At this point in time, due to commercial discussions that are ongoing. We're unable to give you guidance on what that might be. Safe to say that further announcements are expected to follow in due course. We have been fortunate to secure two exceptionally strong directors to our board, and we are quite comfortable that they will make a very positive contribution to the deliberations of our board, in particular having regard to their experience in banking and the beverage industry, respectively. With that, I'd like to conclude and hand the call back to the operator to open the call for questions.
Thank you very much, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, if you'd like to ask a question, you are welcome to press star then one on your touchtone phone. That'll place you in the question queue. If you are ever decided to withdraw the question, you're welcome to press star then two on your touchtone phone to remove yourself from the question queue. Just a reminder, should you wish to ask a question, you're welcome to press star and then one. The first question comes from James Twyman of Prescient Securities.
Hi there. I've got two questions. The first one is regarding the beverage can market. You said the market's grown at 3%. Could you give me an idea about what sort of decline in volumes you've seen, given the market share loss that you've had? I'm just wondering whether it's, you know, if it's better than minus 11, then that implies that you're running more full than you were before. And also the disposals comment you've made. You have already said that you're going to look at doing something with the UK plastics business. I'm wondering if it's just a continuation of that comment or whether you're talking about something different. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, James. So we have lost on a net basis volume to the new entrant, as one would expect. So the overall loss in volume, less than 11%. I would put it in conjunction with the market growth in the high single digits at this point in time. The second question, indeed, we are exploring options with regard to the UK plastics business. We have not reached finality with those discussions, so we are unable to give you any definitive guidance on that. In particular, as you're aware, the unfunded portion of the pension liability in that business is a key issue that needs to be resolved, and we continue to engage with all of the role players in that country in order to address the issue. In addition to the UK, we are also looking at some of our businesses where we have, as a consequence of rationalization previously, lost some key skills. Just to give you some comfort, these divestitures are not material, and they are more of a rationalization nature rather than a major shift in direction.
Thank you very much. So what you're saying is that the comment you're making is about some small disposals?
Correct, yes.
And it's not related to the UK, which is an ongoing situation?
Yes, correct.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
The next question comes from Sipa Mandla Shawzi of Coronation Fund Managers.
Good afternoon, guys. I think congratulations on your balance sheets and what you've been able to do in terms of getting better funding and trying to sort out the liquidity issues. I think that's been good. Just my first question will be on the cash proceeds from the glass business. Can you maybe give us an indication of what the amount of those, or maybe a range of what the amount that you expect to receive from that? And then also, what are your plans with that cash? And then secondly, can you give us an idea, maybe based on the 2018 results, just so that we can have an idea in our minds what the size of the revenue and profits that is sitting in Zimbabwe, then we can make a decision for ourselves on what we think the currency is going to do. Can you just give us an idea of that? And then lastly, on the plastics business in South Africa, does it still fit in your strategy, just given the fact that it looks like, you know, the metals business is by far and wide the most important here? Just maybe what you plan to do with that? And then, sorry, one more question. In SA, the new entrant, which is like Gordon Era, that has come in, it looks like you've been able to stave off its impact in these results. But as we know, there's still another entrant that is going to come. Can you just maybe give us an idea of what you think that impact? Should we expect another leg down in terms of SA, Bevcan, as a result of the second entrant coming into the market? Thank you.
Right, if I can ask Glenn to deal with glass, the valuation, and the use of proceeds.
Right. Good afternoon, good morning, everybody. At the 30th of September 2018, in line with normal international financial reporting standards, a full evaluation was done of the value in use for the glass business. It is a very complicated valuation. There are, you know, several variables within that valuation model that are very, very key to the valuation and are highly sensitive to any change in one's estimation of what those are long term. In a business such as glass, quite a significant portion of that valuation is reflective of what one's view is in the terminal year. And it's essentially a 20-year model, which is highly affected by terminal valuations. In the financial statements for the 30th of September, we did disclose in a tornado graph what the main variables were and what the relative types of sensitivity were. We took an impairment of $677 million at the 30th of September 2017. $665 million of that was the impairment of the assets. The balance was a mold impairment. And that landed up with the carrying value of the net operating assets in the glass business sitting at $1.867 billion. And that's reflected on slide number 18 in our year-end presentation. So that is our assessment at that point in time of what we think that the carrying value and value in use was at that date. So that is what the value of the asset is carried at in our books. In terms of the use of the proceeds, we're assessing various options. We certainly continue to have a post-retirement medical aid liability on the group's balance sheet of approximately R1 billion at our last reporting date. There is about R500 million worth of post-retirement medical fund pension funding in the UK, the unfunded pension deficit. And as Andre's indicated, that is an impediment to the sale of that business, so there may be some consideration of potentially addressing that liability. And then, you know, as we've indicated, we do not think that a special dividend is in the interest of the company long term. The share will trade cum-div. As soon as it's paid, it will trade ex-div. So probably a more appropriate consideration would be either the repayment of certain of our interest-bearing debt or a share purchase program.
Right. Thanks, Glenn. If we look at the plastics business, in particular in South Africa, I think it's fair to say that plastics as a substrate globally is facing some headwinds from an environmental perspective. We believe that we have very good alternatives that we can offer and are offering, not only to our customers, but also to major retailers who position themselves as being environmentally aware. These include aluminium beverage cans, which are infinitely recyclable. The recycle rate for aluminium cans at this point in time is 92.5% in South Africa, according to the latest BMI information. But then also we have a liquid cartons business where we have seen significant interest in converting away from plastic. We are keeping a close eye on the plastics situation. We are, as you know, continuously reviewing the profitability of that business and ensuring that we take out cost to the maximum extent possible. When we communicate our half-year results, we will update you on some of our category shifts that we are implementing in that business in order to ensure that the business remains profitable. At this point in time, just to remove any doubts that you may have, the Plastics SA business is not one of the businesses that we are considering exiting from the portfolio. The third question that you raised related to the impact of the second entrant. The latest information that we have is that the second entrant, GZI of Nigeria, will be starting up their plant in July. Considering that the plant then has to be commissioned and go through a ramp-up period, we anticipate that the impact for the current financial year of that second entrant will be very modest indeed. As they ramp up, of course, the impact will become more pronounced. The volumes that they have been allocated are from one customer only. They have not been able to secure additional volumes, to our knowledge, from any other customer, which puts a cap on their available volume. The customer from whom they have secured volume is using two bespoke can sizes, a 300 ml and a 400 ml can, and these cans therefore cannot be used to attack any other customer. So they will have to assume additional complexity if they wish to approach any of the other Bevcan customers in the market, which will have an obvious impact on the available usable capacity. So as we have guided before, we estimate that the current throughput that Golden Era are achieving in the market on an instantaneous annualized run rate basis is between 350 and 400 million, and we anticipate that it will take GZI probably about a year, if not longer, to achieve a similar level from startup in July, just to give you guidance for what we expect for the following financial year. Thank you.
Okay. I think that is all, guys. Thank you very much for... Okay, one more thing that you did not answer. Can you give us an indication in your 2018 results what the revenue and profits were from Zimbabwe?
Revenue and profits from Zimbabwe. Zimbabwe, NAMPAC Zimbabwe is a listed entity, so we do have to be careful in terms of stock exchange regulations, what we disclose about what we see there. But you're very welcome to go onto their website. They communicate separately with their investor universe, and we don't want to have crossed wires in that regard.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
The next question comes from Rowan Gallo of Marcy Macquarie.
Good afternoon, guys. Thanks for the call. Two quick questions. Firstly, when you talk about reaching capacity in Nigeria, what is capacity there at the moment? We've got your nameplate capacity, but where do you see you'll settle? And then secondly, Glenn, dividends, you spoke about a special dividend, but just resumption of normal dividend. What conditions would you need to see before you'd look at resuming normal dividends? Thank you.
Rowan, if you look at the time that you need as lead time and ordering equipment, installing equipment, and so forth, that is about 18 to 24 months before you can bring a second line into production from getting the necessary board approval to make that investment. So that is why we believe that at current growth rates, the investment decision really is imminent, because we are currently running at about 700 million cans. The full usable capacity based on shutdown for maintenance, based on certain efficiency assumptions, is just under a billion cans per annum. But then you are really running flat out 24/7 with very little pause for any contingencies. And that is not a situation that we'd like to find ourselves in. So the headroom that we've got in the line to accommodate further growth is actually not that great, and therefore the discussion about this, the second line, becoming imminent. And if I can ask Glenn to handle the second question.
Ryan, I think just to clarify what I said earlier is that possibly, you know, the use of a big inflow like the proceeds from the sale of glass would be used as a share buyback as opposed to a special dividend. Our indications to the market earlier has been that, you know, as the gearing gets into a very moderate level, which it is getting into now, and will be further enhanced by the disposal of glass, we would be, you know, recommending to our board, and we can't bind them at this point, but that a more moderate dividend payout ratio be applied in the future. You know, a cover of 2.5 times is probably a more realistic cover as opposed to the previous payout ratio of 64.5%. So I think, you know, 2.5 times, 40% payout ratio, that's a more realistic situation. And, you know, with the glass disposal, we're in the final stages of negotiating the sale of business agreement. Once that is concluded, that would obviously be classified as a large merger and will have to go to the Competition Commission. And we'll then be, you know, in their hands in terms of the time frame with which that deal gets approved. We do hope that that would be before the 30th of September, so we could account for that cash receipt in this financial year. If it is not before the 30th of September, we certainly hope that it will be before we announce the full year results. And I think there would be more clarity there at that point on the direction that the board will take on resuming a dividend and or a share buyback or other capital distribution.
Thank you.
The next question comes from Bopelo Robotata of Investec.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, thank you.
Thank you, Bopelo from Investec. I just wanted to ask, what's happening with the average selling price of cans? You didn't say anything about that. Thank you.
We don't normally talk about the average selling price of cans, except in fairly general terms. So in South Africa, we have been able to maintain margins in our bev can business at similar levels that we were able to achieve previously. So you can work on between 10 and 12% margins, so that prices obviously vary widely depending on the customer. In Angola, because of the price pass-through that we've got with the dollar link back to the Kwanza, obviously in Kwanza terms, prices have gone up very significantly in order to accommodate the devaluation in the Kwanza. But we are still looking at margins roughly in the mid-20s in Angola, and somewhat lower in Nigeria, and this is as a consequence of the higher volumes. As we've explained previously, we are always aware of the fact that it is beneficial to us to shed unit margin in order to gain volumes, because of the disproportionate positive impact of higher volumes on profitability.
Thank you.
The next question comes from Munira Carver of SPG Securities.
Hi, Andrew and Glenn.
Hi, Munira.
So just to focus on Nigeria quickly, I see that 530 million was extracted, but the balance has remained flat. So was there a big working capital absorption to get to the higher volumes? And to follow on from that, if you were to expand your nameplate capacity, what type of working capital absorption would that take over time to ramp up, in the initial phase?
Munira, it's Glenn speaking.
Yeah.
And just to point out that at the 30th of September 2018, we had the rand equivalent to $300 million in Nigeria. That has dropped to $255 million in the 6 months. Now, one needs to bear in mind that we have to keep certain in-country working capital levels of funding in place. So whilst the dollar availability is very good in-country, we try and ensure that we keep sufficient in-country cash available to fund purchases, pay salaries, pay wages, pay local suppliers. So there's a good movement in the right direction here. And as you can see, the cash transfer rate, which is essentially the cash we transferred in the period as a percentage of the cash balance we had at the 30th of September, is 176%. So as we contract further and further, we're just trying to find the optimal balance level in that economy to have the in-country cash. In terms of the funding of the ramping up of working capital, we've got two treasuries. One is a treasury for South Africa, and there's a separate treasury that funds the rest of Africa that is operated out of the Nampak International Limited Company in the Isle of Man. Those are separate and are not dependent on one another. They operate independently. We have sufficient working capital facilities within the facility to more than fund any growth in the position there. And the model that we're trying to follow is to make sure that any increased raw material requirements are funded by the foreign creditor who supplies the Isle of Man company. And essentially, the Nigerian business would then only be effectively funding its working trade receivables balance. So if you were working on a situation of worst case of 30 days position, and they are invoiced on average in the mid-month, we'd have a 45-day working capital situation at worst. But in some cases, there is an earlier payment profile than that. So, if you were to model that ramp up and you took the expected growth in sales and you divided it by 365 and times it by 45 days, that would be a reasonable stab at what the additional working capital requirement would be to fund the growth. And you will clearly see from the significant headroom we have in our banking facilities that is easily fundable.
Yes. Okay, cool. And then on Angola, the hedging is now dropped to 43%. So it's relating to obviously the supplies you have to pay. You have to keep that money in Kwanzaa. Am I understanding that correct?
No. If I can just explain it to you, it's a rule that the government has put in place where all imports into the country have to be backed by cash-backed letters of credit. So,
okay.
If we just look at the strategy in big picture, last year we expected a devaluation of the Kwanzaa. We went on the strategy to hedge against that, and we were successful in that and avoided a 1.6 billion rand devaluation impact, which would have happened had we not hedged. Now the rules have changed, and in a strange way, they're actually very positive for us, because now every importation is backed by a cash-backed LC. So we know that all imports now, the cash will flow back to the Isle of Man because they cash back by the letter of credit. So I don't think one should worry too much about the reduction in the cash hedge position. And I think you can see that there's only been a 7% devaluation in the Kwanzaa from the 1st of October to the 28th of February.
Yeah.
We are looking at different hedging mechanisms in country. There are certain mechanisms where you can get very, very attractive interest rates and positive cash that, if you look at the market commentary, are significantly in excess of what potential further devaluation in the Kwanza would be. So it's a case of trying to balance that hedging program with also ensuring continuity of supply into the country to this cash-back position.
Yeah.
And the remaining...
That letter of credit, does that lock in a dollar spot rate? Would the Bank of Angola give you a locked-in rate to get, so if you hold in the Kwanza, to give them that, and they'll give you the dollars to settle the creditor?
Yes,
it doesn't provide you that protection?
Yes, as far as I understand, that is the case.
Okay. And just one last one, just on the UK, you guys said demand is a bit weak. Can we expect that business to break even or post a profit this year?
Break even, possibly a minor loss, but it's in that ballpark.
Okay. Okay. No, thank you. Thanks.
For the full year, Monera?
Yes. Yes. Got it. Okay. Thanks.
Yeah.
Cheers.
Ladies and gentlemen, just a reminder, should you wish to ask a question, you're welcome to press star and then one. The next question comes from Brent Muddell of RENCAP.
Good afternoon. So I got your comments with regards to the second new entrance into the SA Bethcam market early on in the call. If I could just go into a little bit more detail on that. And understandably, a second entrant will have to ramp up, and understandably, it will take time for them to achieve any sort of volume, and you've indicated that at least could take up to 12 months. Just having a look at Oppenheimer and Partners' website, who seem to be partnering GZI or partly funding GZI's expansion into South Africa, looks like the capacity coming on board is 1.2 billion cans. I suppose if you just have a look at Golden Ear, which is running, as you said, between 350 and 450 million cans, I mean, their capacity also, they call it 600 or 650 million cans. If one just takes into consideration the amount of capacity that's coming on stream, as major contracts come up for renewal, there has to be an increased risk of some volume loss. Do you believe at this stage it's necessary to take a strategic call just in terms of your capacity? Or are you guys rather of the opinion that you'd rather wait and see how it plays out?
That's a very good question, Brent. You touched on a number of angles there. I think the first one is the ramp-up curve. So Golden Era have been operating for over a year now, and they're only now sitting at about 350 to 400 million on an annualized run rate basis. So the ramp up is always rather slower than one would anticipate. I would assume that there would be a similar ramp up rate for GZI, assuming that they can secure volume in the market from other customers. Certainly what they've secured at this point in time is below that volume. So that is the first consideration in terms of modeling the impact for both the current financial year as well as for the following financial year. Then I think the other point is that nameplate capacity, as we've said before, should not be confused with the actual usable capacity, having regard to the fact that there are 8 different can sizes in the South African market, 43 different customers. So there's a significant degree of complexity, which is far more difficult to accommodate on a single line, and that caps the usable capacity, according to our estimates, on a single line to about 600 million cans at most, if you are highly efficient at doing changeovers and job changes. So the net impact of these two lines will be far less than the combined total that the nameplate capacity is, as the two new entrants have claimed. And insofar as our approach to our own capacity is concerned, we are
obviously keeping close tabs on the situation. What we don't want to do is to take out capacity, particularly aluminium capacity. Bear in mind that the Epping line that we took out was an old, slow tin plate line, so there was also a technology reason for taking that capacity out of our portfolio. The remaining lines that we have are all relatively new. They are performing well. They are all aluminium-based. They are high-speed lines. So we believe that they are quite competitive and, in fact, give us an advantage in terms of accommodating the complexity in the market. So at this point in time, we are not considering taking out any further capacity. Also bear in mind that the lines that we currently have are located in Roslyn and Springs. So if you took out one line, the incremental savings certainly would not be equivalent to the 60 million that we were able to achieve in Cape Town with taking out an entire factory. So especially seeing that the Bevcan market is growing ahead of GDP, and the fact that we are pursuing some new marketing initiatives, which we believe will expand the addressable market, for example, water, wine, other beverages that have historically not been marketed in cans. We are addressing those, and that will then, we believe, expand the addressable market and then drive back share for cans going forward.
Sorry, if I can just follow up with a question. I suppose intuitively, one would assume that GZI would be better operators in producing beverage cans in Golden Era, just given the history and the track record and experience they have in producing cans. So just to clarify, if I can, so, you know, if they've got a capacity of 1.2 billion, surely given the factors that you've indicated, they would also be aware that they wouldn't be able to achieve near capacity, given the complexity, or do you think that they're not understanding the complexities of as you've mentioned, in the local market?
The Nigerian can market is a very simple market. They produce effectively one can size on their line in Akbara, and then they manufacture 500 ml cans in their line in Aba. At one stage, they experimented with a small dumpy can, and that wasn't particularly well received in the market. So it's a far simpler market. Now, am I saying that they're not good operators? No, I'm not saying that at all. They make good quality cans. Nothing wrong with the product they put on the market in Nigeria. However, bear in mind that they are not able to transfer people at will into South Africa. There are issues around work permits that we understand very well, having regard to our repeated attempts to bring in foreign skills into our glass operations in South Africa. So that will be a challenge. But then secondly, just the mathematics of accommodating the different complexities and the different can sizes. Every time you do a decoration change, it takes you, depending on the decoration change, 2 to 4 hours to bed down. So you lose that production time. Every time that you do a height change, you lose between 6 and 8 hours. When you do a diameter change, you lose between 8 to 12 hours. So just the mathematics of that will dictate that you lose capacity because of the complexity in the market. Now, I don't know whether they've accommodated those calculations in their assessments of available capacity, but we certainly think that it will be a constraining factor on the available capacity that they can use to attack the market.
Great. Thanks very much.
The next question comes from Chris Logan of Opportune.
Hi, Andre. Thanks a lot for all the communication and hard work. Just two questions. I'm sure you're tracking Ball Corp. It's not re-rated up to a PE of something like 40 on the back of the whole sustainability play, I believe. You know, whereas Nampak, we're sitting in single-digit PEs. Do you see any major re-rating potential, you know, and are you shaping the business in a way to hopefully get a re-rating potential, given that rating of a, you know, focused company like Ball? That would be the first question. Then the second question would be these new entrants coming into Cairns, they're obviously doing it on the back of a investment assessment, and my guess would be they're committing capital because they believe they're lower cost than Nampak. How do you react to that statement? You know, and if you don't think it's lower cost, what do you think it is? And I guess that assessment's quite critical because at some stage you want to stem, you know, loss of market share and all these guys bringing in new investments into Cairns. Thanks.
Sure. Chris, to quote Shakespeare, a re-rate of the Nampak share is a consummation devoutly to be wished. We think that if you look at the composition of our portfolio, we 85% of our profits now come from our metals business. We are, in fact, by and large, a metals business.
Yes.
And I think that the discount that you referred to is not so much attributable to the fact that we've got diverse substrates, but it is attributable to the fact that there are economic challenges affecting the portfolio in Angola, in Zimbabwe, and then, of course, the competitive situation in South Africa. So I think while it's tempting to say sell all the rest and just become a Bevcan company and that will trigger a major re-rate, I think the reality of the situation is a little different and has to do with the current prevailing situation in key markets. Now, we remain positive and optimistic that the longer-term prospects for significant growth in Angola and Nigeria and even in South Africa, given the effort that we're putting into marketing and expanding the addressable market for beverage cans, that those will pay off and that we will recover. But we will continue the rationalization process of the portfolio. But at this point in time, I don't want to signal that we are going to become a Bevcan-only business. I think that would be somewhat premature at this point in time. In terms of lower costs that are claimed by our competitors, we have done an extensive analysis on our costs. Now, bear in mind that costs cut both ways. You need to look at your overhead cost per can produced. And in view of the fact that we have quite high efficiencies in our plants, so we've got in Springs 3 lines under one roof, in Roslyn 2 lines under one roof, we have established low-cost IT systems, for example. We were able to dilute management effort across all 5 lines instead of only one line. We don't think that our overhead cost structure is significantly uncompetitive compared to the allocated cost per can that will be borne by the two new entrants, particularly not after we've taken out 60 million in our cost by shutting down Cape Town and also by forcing some retrenchments through at our Bevcan head office and also by managing costs quite closely at our corporate head office. So I think that from a cost competitiveness point of view, also from a procurement perspective, we are certainly not doing badly at all. I can give you perhaps something of a flavor of what is important in terms of economies of skill and scale. We are able to offer a tailor-made weight offering per can. While we know that our competitor, Golden Era, uses only one gauge of aluminium across all of their products. So on some of their cans that they sell, they give away as much as half a gram of aluminium. Now, that doesn't sound like a lot, but if you start to multiply that across 100 million or so cans, the cost disadvantage because of the inability on the single line to accommodate different complexities becomes quite compelling. So we are not too uncomfortable with our ability to compete in the market, and we think we are well positioned, having paid a lot of time and attention, as you know, over the past number of years to improve our operations and become a lot more competitive.
Thanks. At the risk of belaboring the point, I think about 18 months ago, you made the remark that, you know, Nampak was probably the last diversified packaging company in the world. And it looks like, you know, all those competitors who got big ratings went through a process of focus. And hopefully when glass proceeds come in, it should enable you, give you the flexibility to focus, you know, more. How do you react to those statements? Sorry, putting you on the spot a bit. But
No, Chris, I think it's a very good point that you make, and I stand by the statement that I made 18 months ago, and that is why we are continuing on this rationalization and focusing of the portfolio, because what we want to do is we want to get focused on those businesses where we are able to earn an acceptable return on invested capital. And clearly the glass business is not one of those businesses, and hence our decision to exit it from the portfolio. We are on a much smaller scale, as I signaled earlier on in my responses to one of the earlier questions, looking at some parts of our plastics portfolio in order to understand, you know, do we make money on all of the products that we sell? And we will continue to weed out loss-making or marginal SKUs and product categories. I think you will see some incremental steps, certainly not quantum leaps, but incremental steps to further rationalization and improvement of the portfolio in order to achieve that. Ultimately, I don't want to give too much guidance at this point in time as to what the portfolio will look like in 2 to 3 years' time, but I think you can clearly see an ever-increasing focus on metals as our substrate of choice, and a fairly clinical, ruthless elimination of all of the other substrates that do not contribute.
Okay, thanks a lot.
We have a follow-up question from Sipamandla Shulzi, our Coronation Fund Managers.
Just a couple more questions. In the South African metals business, my understanding is that, you know, the big contracts with like the likes of ABI and the Cokes, those are high volume but low margin contracts, and then you have those sort of smaller contracts where you get a lot of margin. Now, my question is, the new entrants that are coming in, I would imagine that they are going for those sort of like smaller, high-margin contracts. Would if that is the case, does it mean that, you know, over the next 3 years, then we see your margins coming under a lot of pressure as you lose, you know, this sort of like 200-odd volume business to these businesses? So that's my first question. And then my second question would be, what can you give us some guidance on the tax rate, say, over the next 2 years?
Okay, I will leave the tax rate question to Glenn. Let me deal with the impact of the issue here with the phone. Your understanding is correct that the big customers typically enjoy a lower unit margin, which is what you would expect. However, the second part of your statement is not correct, and that is that the new entrants have focused on those smaller customers. They have, in fact, focused on the big volume that became available, which is the Coca-Cola contract. And this is where they have focused a lot of their volumes. Now, according to our calculations, even assuming some very, very competitive overhead cost structures, certainly significantly lower than what we think is achievable, we are of the view that at the volumes that both these new entrants are likely to achieve with the Coke contracts that they have been allocated, and at the margins that they put forward, that they are likely to be negative from a profitability perspective at an operating profit level, and possibly even at an EBITDA level. So with other words, cash negative. Now, we don't know why they would enter into agreements at such low prices. It doesn't make sense. It may be attributable to the fact that it is a lack of experience in fully understanding the rather complex pricing mechanisms that go into setting some of these prices. So I think that we are, again, fairly well positioned with regard to the new entrants in terms of maintaining relationships. I recently had a conversation with our biggest customer's new chief executive, and he said that they were always of the view that Nampak wasn't particularly good in terms of service, but having experienced service from the other supplier, he now, in fact, thinks that we're very good. So I think, you know, experience does matter, and I think we have certainly upped our game in terms of meeting our customers' expectations in terms of service quality, but then also in terms of being competitive on price. Glenn, your tax rate?
Right. In terms of the tax rate, just to remind you that the final status in Nigeria came to an end on the 31st of December 2017. And the tax holiday for Angola ends on the 30th of April 2019. Now, their particular tax periods run from January to December, where our tax years run from October to September. Where one works out the actual computable tax in Nigeria, after the five-year pioneer status, you get into year six, which is a set of peculiar tax principles that are applied to it. In that year, you take the accounting profit and you reduce that
profit by the previous 5 years' worth of wear and tear. You then also add back the depreciation for year six and deduct year six's wear and tear. And you get to a taxable income number, which has been significantly reduced by those capital allowances. In addition, any foreign exchange losses that were unrealized that have been converted to realized, one can claim as a tax deduction. So whilst the tax rate that is applied to the profits for the year is doubled in year six, the effective tax rate is not that, because you will then take the actual computable tax and divide it by the pre-tax profit. So there are misconceptions around the fact that the tax rate will spike straight away to the 64% for Nigeria. That's not the case. And because we were able to time the cash extraction from Nigeria post coming up the pioneer status, it gives us a significant shield until we have to pay cash tax. So the impacts of Nigeria will be muted in some respect. The Angolan position is slightly different. From the 1st of May, we'll have to start paying tax at the rate of 30%. So the reality is that the tax rate will increase and move up probably to, around the 15% mark, and then move, up into a range of around 20% over the next 3 to 5 years. And depending on the mix of profits contributed by Angola this year and Nigeria, it will impact the rate as well as what the average exchange rate is in the foreign jurisdictions.
Thank you very much, guys.
Ladies and gentlemen, just a final reminder, should you wish to ask a question, you're welcome to press star and then one. Gentlemen, we don't seem to have any questions from the lines. Do you have any closing comments?
Well, thank you very much for the engagement. As you know, we are entering closed period at the end of the month, and then we look forward to engaging with you again when we release our half-year results towards the end of May. Thanks very much for participating in this telephone conference, and we wish you a good day. Thank you.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. On behalf of NAMPAC, that concludes this afternoon's conference. Thank you for joining us. You may now disconnect your lines.